Hello, good afternoon. Can I have your attention, please? Thank you. We are ready to start. My name is Inigo, and I'm an addict. Let's open up with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer, please. God, grant me serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the wisdom to know, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, we have been asked Jim F. to read Who is an Addict? Please, Jim.
Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an addict. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
And now Jamie is going to read Why Are We Here?
My name is Jamie and I am a recovering addict. This is Why Are We Here? Before coming to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life like other people do. We had to have something different, thought we'd found in drugs. We placed our use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, our husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we'd harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realize that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease for which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Now, Mark G. will read us a piece of literature. Mark, please.
I'm Mark, I'm an addict. Power of acceptance. The atmosphere of acceptance and welcome we found in NA was a breath of fresh air for those of us who couldn't breathe freely for a long, long time. The basic text tells us the masks have to go. And we notice that when the metaphorical masks come off, it's so much easier to breathe. For some of us, NA might be the very first place we have been where we suspected that we might be able to show our true selves to others. We may not feel that way in every meeting or with everyone we know in NA, but little by little, we become much more comfortable showing who we really are. Thanks for letting me serve.
Well, I'm Inigo, I'm an addict. I'm from Spain, and I live in Spain. And you know, it's been an honor to be asked to chair this workshop, and I've been asked to share for about 5 minutes. The power of acceptance. I was thinking, and you know, the idea of acceptance is the what resumes this program, right? We surrender, and then we reach acceptance through action. We have to do things. It's not something that just come out of the blue and then you accept things. It's difficult. It's very hard. In my experience at the beginning, it was accepting the fact that I was an addict, and that acceptance of being an addict implied a lot of things. I had to renounce to things that I like it very much, or I thought I like it, like doing drugs, you know. What is going to be without drugs? The life is going to be boring, etc., you know. And then I had to accept that. Okay, if I continue this way, I will end up, you know, as the reading says, jails, institutions, or death. And I didn't want that. I had a little, you know, a little spark inside me that was telling me, no, man, don't go that way. You know, try something different. So at the beginning, I accepted I was an addict and what that meant. And with, you know, some time after, I realized that, you know, I had to accept other things, like aging, you know. yeah, well, I'm 71 years old, and yeah. And I was a bit scared. When you change of, you know, from 5 to 6, 6 to 7, and I don't want to mention the next one because, you know, yeah, I had to accept that my body was changing, that I was aging, that I had, you know, difficulties, I had less abilities. I had to cope with different situations, you know, and at the beginning, you know, to reach acceptance, there was a very clever girl called Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She described the process of acceptance by denial, anger, bargaining. Well, maybe it's not that bad, you know. Maybe I can do that. And then depression. And then finally acceptance, right? And, you know, I discovered that acceptance is the answer to not suffering, you know. If I accept that I have limitations, if I accept that, you know, I cannot do everything, I'm not perfect, and I'm fine not being perfect, then life is much easier for me, you know. Some years ago, I would have been completely nervous here, you know, because I was probably be thinking, okay, they're looking at me and you know, probably judging me and stuff like that. Today, actually, I don't care. I accept my, you know, my poor English or my rich English, whatever, my accent, my condition, and it's okay, you know. And so I'm not suffering that much. I am completely in love with this program, you know. Without this program, I wouldn't be the person that I'm right now, and I like that. I don't know. Yeah, still have I have my secret watch over there. I still have one minute, you know. So yeah, acceptance. I mean, the power of acceptance is what gave me the ability to live my life on life terms. I have had ups and downs in my recovery. I made money. I lost money. I was in financial difficulties. I overcame those difficulties, and nowadays I'm okay. You know, I'm satisfied. I would like to stay longer here. I don't know. That depends on me. But I do my part. You know, it's not just, hey, come on, God, please grant me this and grant me that. I know I have to do my part. I I go to the gym, not very much, but I go to the gym 3 times a week, and at least I'm doing my part. You know, I try to eat healthy. I do meditation. Meditation helps me a lot to accept myself. You know, it puts me in a mood, in a serene mood that allows me to accept the things that I don't expect from the daily routine. You know, so I have like 20 seconds, and I'm gonna use them to say thank you to all the people that have walked the path, this path of recovery with me, and I owe them so many things. I would spend probably hours, naming people that have helped me being the person that I'm now and the person I expect to be in the next 20 years or so. Thank you very much. Okay, and at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Kathleen from Arkansas.
Ooh. I've never had this dream. I'm an addict. My name's Kathleen. I'll start with this. I kept thinking, what am I going to talk about? How do you go into talking about this? And we came to Washington, D.C. on the 24th, and my husband and I, and we planned a journey. And on our journey, I got COVID. So I just want to say that to say this. I have been cleared by the doctor, so if I wasn't, I would not be sharing here right now. I do have a mask, but as it was red, it had to go. So with that, we had a hotel room right here at the convention center because we signed up for this right in the very beginning. And we had two newer members that came with us. Neither one of them had been to a world convention, and then we reached out to another friend that reached out to us wanting to join us. So there ended up being 5 of us, and we had 4 in the room, and when we were getting ready to leave D.C., we told the one young man, instead of going to your room, just stay in our room. This is the way spirit works. So we left, I got COVID, and they have been just having the best time in Washington, D.C. And so when we came back to isolate, we went to this hotel that's out in Laurel, which is, I don't know, it seems like it's forever away, but it's just down the road. And you can't get there by the train, though. So we've been out there, and it's like, that's where we're supposed to be. And that's an acceptance. That's an acceptance because I've been to a world convention before, not once, not twice, but I've been a few times. And so it's important that these young people, as was talked about, getting older in recovery, these young people need to experience some of the things that I've experienced, and I want that for them. So that was an acceptance that I had. I had been in touch with the people here saying, I don't know if I can be there, and yet here I am, because Spirit has a plan. I don't know what it is. I just have to accept it. So the next thing that I'm going to talk about, because it's where my person is right now, and sometimes I want to feel like I shouldn't talk about it. And I say that because people in my area have heard me talk about it, because I don't hide it. I don't take away from it. But in January of last year, my son was diagnosed with ALS. And my son was my loving child. He was the one that snuggled and, you know, mama's boy. And one of the things that recovery taught me was that in that process, the acceptance in there was that I was his mother. I was not his next of kin. His wife was his next of kin. And his son was his next of kin. And I'm grateful that because I was able to kind of step back and just accept that, that they let me be a part of all of it. And he passed away in August of last year. So we've just passed a year anniversary, and it isn't any easier. It isn't any easier, but he's with me all the time. I told him that before he left, I would find him in feathers, and on our journey, I found this little feather when we were walking up to a hospital. Perfect. I have it in my bag. Because if I see a feather and I think of him, it's coming home with me. Big, small, little, I mean, you know, doesn't matter. Could have bird crap on it, I don't care. because I have a place at home where I put them. And I feel like that's him reminding me to be in acceptance. I was working in the yard one day and I found this little feather and I put it in my pocket of my sweatshirt and I was picking up some more wood, getting it ready to go on the wood pile, and I noticed there was another little feather, and I picked it up and I put it in my pocket and went back to work doing some things, and then I saw another little feather, and I thought, man, that feather looks like the same feather, and why are these feathers at one time? And I looked in my pocket and I didn't have a feather. And I'm a really big believer in three is a charm. And I got a message at that point, and I felt like it was a message from my son saying, I'm okay, Mom, you can let me go. But I'm always gonna carry him, so I can't let him go. So prior to that journey, I stayed in contact with my sponsor while I sat next to his bedside, and I didn't call her because I didn't want to talk to her next to him, but I learned to text to her. I want to talk to my sponsor. I want my sponsor to know if I feel like this. I don't want my sponsor to have to think if I'm feeling good or feeling bad or, you know, whatever, mad. There's a whole row of emotions, but I can't tell you. I can give you those. So I started texting my sponsor, and I would text her every day. I started out with a gratitude list because I needed some acceptance in what was in the near future. And I started texting her every day a gratitude list, and I made 10 things, and I tried never to repeat them. And it was really easy to do because I could see my son right there next to me. And it was my daughter-in-law was there, my grandson was there. My daughter came from Las Vegas with her little babies, and we tried to go through this thing together. And while my daughter was there, her husband died as a result of the disease in Las Vegas, so she had to go back. And she came to my son's side because she told her husband that she was coming to her brother's side because he wanted to live, and her husband didn't. He wouldn't make any efforts. He wouldn't And I don't know that he didn't want it. I have his basic text, and I know there was times that he wanted it, but he didn't get it, and it was unfortunate. And the beauty that came from that was my daughter now lives there with us again, with her babies. So I have my three grandbabies are there in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and we're all together, and we're building another life, and we're not building it without their fathers. We're building it with them, just in a different way, and that's acceptance. So I didn't know that when I was texting my sponsor through all this, that the woman that was my that I had for a short time prior to that, because my sponsor had moved, I asked a woman closer to me if she would come, I mean, if she would be willing to be my sponsor. And she agreed, and we had history, and it was beautiful, and we loved and embraced each other, but I couldn't get a hold of her all the time. She worked on the phone, and my best option to get a hold of her was to text. And what I realized later, after my son was gone, what I realized was that with that was higher power was setting me up. Because I didn't want to text my sponsor. But he set me up with this person so that I could get in a habit of texting. Because when I was sitting next to him, I had to text. I couldn't communicate. I went to Zoom meetings while I sat next to him with my earbuds in, and I would text the chairperson of the Zoom meeting what was going on in my life. And that was acceptance for me. That was me accepting the fact that I've got to do something different, but I was staying connected with this place that gave me this beautiful life, that offered me a dream that I'm standing here in front of you at, that I never even knew I dreamed. I don't know that I would still dream this dream. So, there's been some things in recovery that have been difficult that I've gone through in the years that I've been coming. And those are the things that are happening that I'm going through right now. And any of my people that I recover with in my hometown will tell you that I'm the first one to say that I love the woman in the mirror. She is the reflection that I have to respect. This isn't about you guys. I don't care if you like me or not. If she doesn't like me, I have a problem. I have a big problem. You guys won't take me out. She will. And after my son died, there was a woman that was going through something of the very similar experience, and I reached out to her. Her son was on life support. He had taken a fall. It was a long fall, and he had brain trauma, and he didn't make it. And I reached out to her, and I told her, this is something that we can go through together. And my disease, I don't have any desire to use, but my disease is so alive and well that one day I sent her a text, and I said to her, I said, have you used today? And she said, no, I haven't used since the accident. And I said, well, that's good, because if you were using, I was going to come over and use with you. Now, I don't know that I said that because I wanted to use, or if I said that because I wanted her not to want to use. So I don't want to go anywhere. I've changed my clean date one time. I don't want to change it again. I love and respect this fellowship. If I didn't respect the fellowship, I wouldn't be I would be standing here with COVID or something, you know. I don't even like the fact that I have this cough, but acceptance can be hard, but it can also be really easy. And I have an amazing husband. I have an amazing life. My son built his mama this amazing house before he passed, before he lost his ability to do the work. And he's surrounded all around me. My family is close to me. And I know if that reflection in the mirror, the one that I can accept or not accept, sometimes I don't like her, but I always respect her. If I'm not careful, I don't have any of that. Because my daughter-in-law will not allow me to see my grandson. Well, and he's at an age now where he probably wouldn't want to see me anyway. He's 14. And it would crush me, because he's what all I have left of my son, other than the memories. And I'm here today making memories. And we went to a meeting last night, because we're trying to go to meetings in every state, and we had two over here that we had to go to, which was Jersey and Delaware. And we came to, well, I could give you more of that story, but some of you know, I won't do that here because some of you might not like it. It's just a fun thing. Anyway, we went to Maryland one time, but we didn't get to the meeting because I miscalculated, and which is fine. So we made a meeting last night in Maryland. So we have two states left, which are Washington State and Oregon State. And I was going somewhere. So we made this meeting last night, and there was a newcomer girl there, and I gave her my number. They sent out a paper, and I was so in awe about 20 minutes after we left that meeting, because she started contacting the people that were on the list of numbers that she was given. And I was like, oh, so proud of her for doing that. And we had this really long conversation on text. And she said, would you send me a picture so I know if it's you or who you were? And I sent her a picture of my husband and I, because I don't like doing selfies. I'm not all that. But I'll do it with somebody else. And so I sent her the picture, and I told her that we were from Hot Springs, Arkansas. And it was so beautiful. She said, "Oh, my grandparents in Hot Springs, Arkansas." And I thought, absolutely, because we're family. We are family here. We love each other. We argue with each other. We tolerate each other sometimes, but we're with each other. We are in acceptance of each other. And I just want to say with that, I thank you so much for loving me until I could love that woman in the mirror so that we could love you back. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, for what a powerful share. And now I have the honor to introduce our next speaker, Roberta, from South Carolina.
Ooh, Hi, y'all. give me 1 second. Okay, got my literature here. Love literature. Hi, family. My name is Roberta, and I am an addict. I just want to welcome the newcomer, and I want to welcome you all to the World Convention number 38 in Washington, D.C. Before I start, first and foremost, I want to just thank the convention committee, the World Office, for putting on this gigantic convention for all of us to come and celebrate recovery. I want to thank my friends from Brazil, Tatiana and Vladimir, because they submitted my name to the convention committee. And I also want to thank...
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
That's right in your face.
Okay. Perfect.
Better.
And I want to thank also all the Brazilian community that's present here, and everybody else, obviously, making this amazing convention happening today and over the weekend. I want to give a couple of shout-outs to Region 51, Las Vegas. That's where I got clean, so I miss you guys. And my new NA community in South Carolina, SCANA and Port City area of Charleston areas. Yeah, so let's get to this topic. And Kathleen, thank you for starting us off, and I'm glad you're here. So the power of acceptance, you know. So I'll share a little bit about my story. I know we don't have a lot of time. Wow, that was 3 minutes already. So you know, like, I'm originally from Brazil. You're going to hear my accent. Sejam bem-vindos, brasileiros. So I started to use at an early age, you know, something that's kind of common in Brazil, since we don't have really, follow, like, drinking aging laws and things like that. So I started really early, 14, 15, you know, and don't have time to go over all my experience in Brazil, but I can tell you that by 19 years old, I was pretty addicted. And I was not only pretty addicted, I was pretty desperate. And I was very suicidal, and you know, I just thought I was gonna die as an addict. I didn't think I was gonna have a way out. And with that desperation, I was invited to come to United States and study English. And I thought that was gonna be a good decision, probably the first healthy decision I ever made in my life. And I thought, well, I can move out here for a few months, and I knew, like, the drinking age was 21, and I knew I wouldn't be able to go to bars, at least legally, you know, and so I moved out here. You know, I had a little suitcase and a pillow inside of my suitcase and a lot of courage. You know, I don't know if I would have that courage at the age that I am right now, you know, and not knowing any English and not knowing anybody, you know. And me and my girlfriend, we moved to California, and I end up in San Diego. And, you know, I was safe for a couple years, maybe 1 year, not a couple years, you know. And then I started to, you know, find our people, you know. It's not that hard, you know. And either they found me or I found them. And so within a couple years, I was out back using. But I did experience a little bit of abstinence time, you know, where I did lived a little bit of a life, and I enjoyed that very much, because I didn't in Brazil. You know, back in Brazil, I didn't. I come from an abusive family and a very dysfunctional family, so lots of things for me were very difficult as far as like acceptance, humility, love, hope, faith, and trust. All the spiritual principles that we learn here, it's not something I grew up with. But I did experience a little bit of that when I was not using, as far as enjoying life and a little bit of happiness and a little bit of healthy choices, a little bit of friendships and relationships, you know. But once I was out there using again, all that stuff just went away. And I was stuck with myself again in the disease of addiction. And we all know how that feels, right? Very lonely, very hopeless, very suicidal, very depressing. Just I couldn't stand living, you know. There was not much living out of my life anymore. So that went on for about 15 years, you know. I would change drugs and I changed locations, you know. Coming here was my first geographical move, you know. But unfortunately, when we move, when we're using, we take ourselves with us, you know, and that's only a temporary relief. It was not the solution for me, you know, and it was helpful, but it didn't solve any of my problems. So anyways, I end up using again, and so that's how my life went on for about 15 years. You know, I was on and off using, on and off of abusive relationships, and on and off in the lifestyle, you know, just what we do, you know. And I end up moving to Las Vegas, you know. I was following him, and I thought, well, again, I don't know anybody in Las Vegas, so let's move to Las Vegas, the Sin City, right? And let's see if I can get clean there, you know. And by the way, Las Vegas have great recovery, you guys, great recovery. There is a convention there in every August, amazing convention, go check it out. So I end up moving to Las Vegas, and you know, the new place, you know, the excitement, I got a job, I was a little functioning again, then somebody else came along, you know, and again, I felt rejected, you know, with the people I was hanging out with in Las Vegas. And what do I do when I feel rejected and I feel like I don't belong, right? I go right back to using. And that's what I did, you know, and I lost everything again. I had a really good job and, you know, all that we lose, you know. And my life was just this in and out of using and building and losing and building and destroying, you know. So by 2010, I'm sorry, that's my clean day. By 2010, I was pretty much done. You know, I hit this emotional bottom. You know, from the outside looked really good because that's kind of what I grew up with. You know, I made sure the outsides look really good, but on the inside, I was just done, you know, with life and just very, very broken. And I remember praying and going online and looking for free rehab, and a Narcotics Anonymous website popped up. Thank you for PI, you know, and for all the other service that we do around here. But that's how I found Narcotics Anonymous. And I remember going to my first meeting, a midnight meeting, you know, and that fit very much my lifestyle. And, you know, because I woke up every night about 9 p.m. and I will be out, you know, doing what I needed to do to get my drugs and money, and then I will be back home by 6 a.m., you know, and that was just, you know, I was just part of that lifestyle in Las Vegas, you know, that a lot of us end up with, you know, that degradation that a lot of us women go through, you know. And so I remember coming into that meeting and being loved and accepted by being a seeking addict, right, seeking recovery. And I walk into this meeting, it was all men in this meeting, and they looked at me as a suffering addict, not how I was used to be looked at, you know, living on that lifestyle, you know. And for the first time, I was showing some acceptance and some love and compassion, you know, and I experienced the love of the fellowship on that first meeting, you know. And I end up just sticking around, you know. I got a sponsor, I started working a program, you know, but that power of acceptance was very, very powerful at the beginning of my recovery. And I love I'm a big literature person, but there's not a lot of time to go over the literature, but I highlighted something from page 16 of the basic text that says the program convinced us that we needed to change ourselves instead of trying to change the people and situations around us. We discovered new opportunities. We found a sense of self-worth. We learned self-respect. This is a program for learning. By working the steps, we come to accept a higher power's will, Acceptance leads to recovery. Boy, I love that. We lose our fear of the unknown, we're set free. And that's kind of what happened for me in 2010. You know, I really jumped into the program and I, you know, was fellowshipping, going to conventions. I'm a big convention junkie, a big service junkie, sponsorship, meetings, you know, everything that was suggested, I did, you know, and I started to feel some freedom in my life. And I started to feel some happiness in my life and some excitement and some joy and some purpose, you know, and so many relationships. You know, the gift of this recovery is just we get to know each other and there's so many relationships that happen here. You know, and I lost the desire to use because I found a place that I belong. I found a place that respects me. I found my own self-respect. And life went on, you know, and I felt like, well, I let go of a lot of my masks, you know, I worked the steps and all that stuff. And around 2018, I started to feel this itch, like, you know, I needed to be a mother. You know, all my life is in line right now for that. And I never wanted to be a mother when I was younger. You know, I was too messed up. I can't have children, like I'm gonna mess them up, you know, I'm gonna give them away, or I can't stop using. So that's one of the things that like addiction stole from me when I was out there, you know. And so by 2018, I decided, you know, it's time. I decided it was the time, you know. And as you can imagine, that didn't go very well. So again, I was not feeling enough. I thought that, you know, I wanted to be a mom because I wanted to have this complete life for me. You know, I found it like, you know, there's something missing in my life. I lost the sight of living in the present moment and having some gratitude. You know, and I went on this journey for 4 years of all kinds of IVF treatments and surgeries, you know, in the middle of COVID. And doctors out of town and other states and hotel rooms. And you know, three losses later, I just couldn't make that happen, you know. And I was connected with my higher power, but I started to feel that by then, this was not God's will for me anymore. You know, I started the journey at 38, now I'm going on 42, you know. So things already have changed with my body and so on. And I had to make a decision that I was going to have to surrender again. You know, and I hit this bottom in recovery, you know. And until this point, everything I have done in recovery, I felt like we succeeded, right? Because I used the steps and, you know, I got to be a person that works, you know, accepted in society. And I really fought at this point, like whatever footwork I'm going to do, God is going to show up for me, you know. And it was my first experience with loss and adversity in recovery, you know, and failure in recovery. I know we share a lot about our successes here, but a lot of us also experience failure in recovery. And what do you do with that, right? There's not a lot of women sharing about failure with IVF and infertility, and I know I'm not the only one in this room, right? And that's kind of became my story in the last couple of years, you know, to share that we can get through clean. We can get through this clean, you know, through losses and just being heartbroken, you know. And I found myself in this new place in recovery. And, you know, and I just had to go back to the basics. And I don't mean like I was working the program the whole time, but I got lost in God's will for me, you know. And a good lesson in humility, you know. And I got back with my sponsor that was supporting me all the way. But when I changed my mind and I made a decision that was right for me, she was right there along with me, you know. And we started to work the spiritual principles all over because I was having a hard time. How am I supposed to apply hope in my life right now and humility and acceptance, surrender? You know, like, where is God in this? So I had to go over all the spiritual principles again and learn about them again, how to apply the spiritual principles in my life again, you know. And the fellowship was always there for me as I went to meetings and I shared about it in my support group. So I never had to do this alone, you know, and I got really close to my higher power. So I'm going to speed up a little bit. And I always had this dream about either moving back to Brazil, closer to the water, the nature, the green, you know, or I would move to a different state where I could find that, because I thought, well, I need a plan B. You know how we are. We need plan B, plan C, plan D, right? And my plan B in life was, you know, if I'm not going to be a mom, if this is not the will for me, I need to go seek nature again, right? Because I feel connected to my higher power that way. And that's how I end up in South Carolina. So that was plan B for me in my life, you know. So this last 2 years, that's what I have been very busy at, you know, learning to live again in a space that I never thought I was going to be at, because I never thought past that point that I was not going to be a mom and I'm not going to have a family, right? And I have to relearn life again with putting this idea aside and learning to live God's will again, you know. And it was very hard at the beginning, you know, but as I kept working the spiritual principles with my sponsor and I got really into the literature and writing and sharing with her, I end up crossing that bridge, you know. So I just want to say that, wow, I'm doing good with time, you guys, great. So I feel like I'm grounded with my true self again, you know, and that little bit of literature that we read at the beginning comes from the spiritual principle of the day of September 3rd. So I love our new spiritual principle of the day. That book is amazing, you know, and it's about practicing one principle a day, you know, and the power of acceptance. Acceptance is a huge spiritual principle, you know. I started recovery with acceptance, and I had to start this new journey in my life with acceptance. And when I am in acceptance and I'm practicing spiritual principle, I'm in peace, I feel freedom, I feel grounded, I feel hopeful, I feel excited. And what I really feel is, I feel in the moment. So I would have never signed up for this lesson, you all. I wouldn't, you know, but it has been a very good lesson in my journey. And so I'm glad that I got the call to share my experience tonight. And I really feel like my higher power made this appointment for me, and all I had to do is show up, you know, and I had planned, and, you know, this is what I'm going to share, and you get here, and you just forget everything, you know. I actually planned for a different topic. That's really funny. So, so, you know, it's just been very interesting, you know, and I just love that I am on this place that I was at the beginning of my recovery. You know, there's a way less control where I'm at, more gratitude, more living in the present moment. And to be honest with you, I am excited today. You know, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be clean. I'm excited for all the people that I have in my life. I'm excited that I was able to restore family relationships. And, you know, my higher power has this beautiful plan for me. Back in 2014, I graduated grad school. You know, this little foreign girl right here, right? Come to find out, I could even study in English, take tests, and write essays every week, you know. And my poor husband, you know, had to put up with all of that, do all the dishes. Thank you for supporting me through school and every day of my life. Thank you. So I finished grad school. I started in 2014. Got to look at the time, I'm wrapping up. And I graduated in 2018, you know, and I didn't really know, like, what's the purpose of this, but I finished school, you know, and what happened is I was not able to be a mom, as I share with you guys, but today, like, I have a job that it's school-based, right, and I work with thousands of children, you guys. That's part of my life every single day. And that's where my heart is. I stepped away for like a year and a half. I was working with a different population, and I went back to the kids. And at this job, I get to give back, and I get to guide kids to things that I never had as a child back in Brazil. You know, I feel like if I had one supported adult in my life when I was in Brazil, when I was using, because I was using in high school. Instead of getting kicked out of high school, if I had had an honest conversation with somebody that understood addiction, that understood mental health, maybe I would have taken a different path and taken different choices, you know. But that's okay. This is what was for me, and I'm grateful for this path. But my higher power brought me back, right back to the schools again. And I get to be that light for mental health, for good, healthy decisions, and I get to be this kid's support on a daily basis. So it's all about perception, right? I can either be in fantasy land and in self-will land, thinking that I'm not enough, and if I take on this role, and if I live in this place, or if I do this for a living, or if I have this car, that's when I'm gonna be okay. Or I can stay grounded in the power of love, in the power of acceptance, in the power of the steps, in the power of the fellowship, in the power of sponsorship, in the power of service. I can stay grounded in that and just be so very grateful for the life I have. So with that, I want to close and say, if you're new, please stay. You are accepted here. You belong here. We want you here. We want you to experience the miracle of recovery. And I want to just say that I love you all. Thank you for this experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta. Great share. Muito obrigado. And now I would like to introduce our next speaker, Richard from New Mexico.
Thank you. On the big stage. Oh, it's on. My name is Rich. I'm an addict. Hello, everybody. How freaking awesome is this? I was just reading. I don't know if the sign is up behind me. Unified and staying alive, coming back for more in 24. How awesome is that for the World Convention? Yeah. Is that as nerve-wracking for you guys down there as it is up here for us? There's a lot of you, both here in the room and all over the place, and I just wanted to take a moment and thank everybody here with the Narcotics Anonymous Convention, everybody here participating and listening live in the crowd and on the internet, and just thank you for this opportunity. I too had a whole bunch of things I was gonna share. Roberta came, she was prepared, she had her books laid out. I have a folder upstairs. I printed the spiritual principle a day for September 3rd. I went to the literature in the spiritual principle, in the Living Clean, in the chapter Awakenings, where they got the reading out of, which also referenced step 5 in the basic text where the masks have to go. And I had all the papers laid out on my desk, and I'm drawing a blank on all of it right now. So what I'm just gonna do is share what's close to my heart right now. So, acceptance is as simple as, before the meeting just a little bit ago, I was in the men's room, and at the hotel here, they don't have very many accessible toilets. For those who can't see, I'm in a power chair. And there was a gentleman in there using that one, and I had to wait, and he was in there and he was apologizing profusely. I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. It's like, man, when you gotta go, you gotta go. And acceptance begins there. And what I wanna share about is that the more that I'm learning to be acceptable with other people, the more gentle I am with myself. Because there are times that I struggle with my limited abilities. And my poor wife, she's here in the audience, she'll attest to this. I get so frustrated and get really down on myself sometimes. In Narcotics Anonymous, it teaches us to give away. To keep what we have, we need to give it away. And so the gentler I am with everybody else, the gentler I tend to be with myself. So coming to acceptance, excuse me, my mouth got dry. Thank you. I just told myself, don't turn around and look at the big screen. I don't want to see myself on that. So I am just now, God, I can't believe I'm at another World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. This is my third one. I went to one in San Diego, one in Philly, and then this one here. And it's just amazing. Look at this place. It's just beautiful. This time I brought my own power chair. I didn't have to rent one of those scooters. DC is so accessible for people like me. I love it. It's been, Anna and I, my wife and I got here over the weekend, and they started putting up the banners and stuff outside, I think on Tuesday. And I saw a picture, somebody put something at the airport that welcomed Narcotics Anonymous. And how beautiful when we could just come together. You know, we went to the Yankees game last night. I think it was like 140 degrees, maybe. I say the Yankees game. Of course, it's the Nationals that hosted them. And the Yanks lost, but I had so much fun being with you guys. Acceptance, right? Except that the Yankees don't win all the time. I went with my, I'm working with a sponsor now who's actually located here in Baltimore. And he was back home years and years ago. We got to know each other, and we shared the same, I guess, sponsor, grand sponsor, however that works. And when my sponsor passed a year ago, it was really challenging. It was a year ago in May. And I've had some losses before my sponsor passed. 1 year, almost to the day earlier, my brother had passed. And there's been lots of loss in my life and recovery. You know, I used to run a very successful consulting company that took me all over the country. And every place I went, I would find myself getting to the room. One of the first things I would do is go to a meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because I know that's going to help me to save my life. And when I go to a meeting and they would ask, is anybody here from out of town? I was the first one. My name's Rich, I'm from New Mexico, I'm from somewhere else, because I was looking for a place to get grounded, for a place to be safe. And everywhere I went, I got made connections. And today with technology of Facebook, it's Anna and I have been, what, 3-4 different countries, a couple different continents, and everywhere as we go, we find Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And our little fellowship is just so worldwide, and how we're all connected is just beautiful. I'm saying that because the job I was working on, of course, I had to quit working. I think it was in 2014, maybe. And I never sold my company, you guys. I got to it, I had this idea, because I'd been diagnosed a few years earlier. I have a neurological condition called multiple sclerosis. And I had this idea that I was going to beat this disease and I was going to go back to work. Acceptance doesn't always come easy. And that hasn't been the case so far. I've been on different study medications and stuff trying to find, you know, I saw a doctor one time, one of those homeopathic doctors. You know, I would call him a voodoo doctor, you know, eye of newt, put these drops of something in the water, spin it, you know, face the east, stand on one leg. I tried all the different stuff. I thought I was going to beat this MS. You know, my grand sponsor, some of you guys knew Ron S., he had MS and saw a healer, and that gentleman helped for him to not have MS anymore. So I looked this guy up, and first time I looked him up on the computer, I read his obituary. I thought, ah, shit, you know what I mean? That hope is gone. And then I don't know why, several years later, I was on the computer, and I looked him up again, and he was having a talk somewhere in the Midwest. So the way the story went, Ron had gone to see the guy, and the guy performed whatever healing practices on him and had taken the MS from him. So I ended up finding him and scheduling a meeting with him in the same place in the Trinidad Shasta Mountains in California. And I actually went to his home, and I was supposed to have like an hour or two session with him. I spent 2 days with him. You know, I was going to get my money's worth. Took him to lunch, right? We hung out, we did all that stuff, and I just didn't have the same experience. there's a somebody by the name of Das, Richard Alpier, it doesn't matter. Anyways, he, towards the end of his life, they called him Baba Ram Das, but he dropped the name Baba, I guess. It was just because he didn't want to be known as a god. And towards the end of his life, he was out in Honolulu on the island, and he had sustained a stroke. And so from there, he never left the big island, left the island ever again. He was stuck at home because of his condition. And in his writings, in his book, he had this really good philosophy how God had stroked him. And I thought, stroked him? I got multiple sclerosis. What am I supposed to say? God scarred me? That doesn't sound right. So I've come to terms with the idea that God has left his mark on me. How's that? There's acceptance there. I feel like Tony D out of Topanga Canyon. I'm bouncing all over the damn place here. So let me go back to where I started. So a year ago, I had lost my sponsor, and that was really challenging. I've been working with this guy for the greater part of about 22 to 25 years in this journey in my recovery. I first got introduced to the program at Narcotics Anonymous in the middle 80s when I was still, I was a bit younger. And I remember going to an NA meeting and seeing a whole bunch of people in there, and I was a kid, you know what I mean? And I looked around and there was just a whole bunch of junkies in that room. I thought to myself, I am not a junkie. I just shoot dope. I'm not like these guys, right? It was different. And so I had gone away. I hadn't come back around for a few years. But when I was there in the middle 80s, I had met a guy in a treatment center. They had said, you get a sponsor, you work certain steps, you go to meetings, and if you don't break any of the rules before you graduate from this program, you sit in the middle of the circle and they call coining you out. And so they would hold a coin and everybody pass it around and they would all say cool shit about you. So of course I wanted that. So I followed all the rules, I got a sponsor, I did all that stuff. And so anyways, that was the first time I had been introduced to Jonathan. And so fast forward many years later, when I came back and got clean again, I had gone through a different series of sponsors until I came back to him again. And my problem with the sponsors before that was I would ask a gentleman to sponsor me and I would relapse. And so I would fire him because of course, right? He did something, he did something wrong, it wasn't me. And so anyways, I had done that, getting loaded, getting a sponsor, getting loaded, getting a sponsor 13 different freaking times. So went back again to Jonathan, and like I said, we worked together. And I have this refrain in my head, and I was just talking to Steve before I came up here, because I often will use the phrase WWJD, what would Jonathan do? And you know, we talk a lot about this whole thing about life and how we tend to take ourselves way too serious sometimes. You know, we're here for only for a second, and why not make the best of the time that we have here? You know, I don't know that at the end of the days, what's gonna happen, right? Let's say there is some bearded whatever in the sky or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And what if at the end of all this journey, you come to meet the Maker and he says to you, well, did you have fun? I sent you to the greatest amusement park in the world. Did you have a good time, you know? I struggled a lot with the 11th step and trying to come to terms with what HP's will is for me, right? And there was a little bit of that talk in the reading in the Awakenings chapter in the Living Clean book. And the 11th step was one of the ones that I struggled the most with. In this day and age, I didn't get a text message, right? God doesn't send me an email, right? It's none of that kind of stuff. I still pray and I meditate the same way I do today that I have been for my recovery for at least the last 15 to 18 years. And what I know is when I come up from my meditation and I feel I'm doing the right thing, there isn't any magic screaming. There's no nothing like that. It's just a knowing that I'm doing the right thing. I'm being gentle with myself and I'm being loving and kind to those in my life. And the gentler I could be with the people outside, the better it is. Oh, she said, don't do that. the easier it is for me to be with me. Sorry, I bumped the microphone on my chest. The easier it is to be gentle with me, right? So it's a challenge for me to get very vulnerable, right, and to ask for help. And somebody had reminded me a long time ago, not that long ago, somebody had reminded me a while ago, when you don't allow people to help you, you're actually robbing, you're stealing from them. And I have this mentality of, it's from when I was a kid, right? When something needed to be done, it was just like, I'll do it myself. You know, I raised three little girls growing up, and those girls had me wrapped, right? They would do the dishes kind of partially, just to piss me off. So I'd say, get out of here, I'll do it myself, right? And I would do the dishes, and they go off and do their thing, right? And so that whole, I don't know if it's machismo, the wanting to be strong, that whole idea of trying to do things myself. And we learn to adapt with our circumstances. Oh my God, how the fuck is that 15 minutes already? Acceptance, let's come back to that. Learning to accept my limitations has been a challenge, right? Learning to accept the circumstances in my life sometimes is really a challenge. One of those things that gentleman I keep referring to taught me is acceptance doesn't mean approval. You could accept your life and the way things are right now without having to approve of them, you know? That's a really good lesson for somebody like me, you know? And my spiritual condition, usually a good litmus test of how my spiritual condition is if you're getting ready to turn and you haven't used your turn signal in your brand new Lexus, and I roll my window down and I happen to say, hey, your turn signal's not working, kind of passive aggressively, I'm probably not in that good of a spiritual place at that moment, right? I haven't arrived. I've worked the steps countless times. I'm on another round of steps with John, who's working, taking me through them again. And I am in no danger of having recovered yet completely, right? There's still more growth to do. I haven't come to a place in my recovery where I've decided, no, that's enough. I would not like any more growth. Thank you. There's still more to do. So I did want to share a little bit more about that 11th step. Well, let me go back. The fifth step where it talks about the masks have to go. That's what was in that reading in the spiritual principle day on September 3rd. And what that means is being able to bear myself as I really am. And so it talked about, I think it was in the meditation, either within the last couple of days, where it said, we don't have to tell everybody everything, but we do have to let all of our secrets out. And so today I live my life in a way where I don't have to freaking keep secrets from anybody, you know? I'm pretty open, and I'm learning to be more, like I don't have to go to every meeting and talk about my struggles, right? I'm going to be vulnerable right here. I have I started my day today in upstairs at the Marriott where we're staying. My lovely wife brings me a cup of coffee, and after my first cup of coffee, I start the day with spasms. And these are like the equivalent of having a Charlie horse. It lasts about 5 or 6 seconds, and it happens consistently every like 15 to 20 seconds. And they last anywhere from usually 15 to 20 minutes to somewhere up to 5 hours. And I have this refrain in my head about, God, that never happens. I've never had spasms like this in DC. This never happens on Monday at 7 p.m. Like, whenever I'm having them, I talk my way through them, and I put them away. And then that's it. I don't dwell in that. I don't stay there. I don't suffer in that. Suffer needs time. You can't suffer in the here and now. At this moment, when they're happening, it's uncomfortable, and it will pass, right? These character defects that I have in my life, when I happen to act out on them, I have the opportunity to ask God to have them be removed, right? These steps that I'm living, this program that I'm living, is such a gift. I've received things in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous that I never even knew that I wanted, right? The gifts, the abundance, the friendships, the love, all of it, right? These are not even things I would have ever dreamed of wanting. So when they talk about the our dreams come true in here, when I was a young guy, I didn't dream of the stuff that I'm having today, right? Come on, man. It was you guys have been in the subway, right? We're in the elevator, smells like piss last night. We get to the Yankees game, like I said, 104 degrees. My team is losing, right? I'm sitting amongst all of you guys in recovery, right? I don't know how many sections they had for Narcotics Anonymous. And just the smile on my face wouldn't go away, kind of like how it is here today. I'm just so happy, so pleased, so blessed to be here to be able to share my story. And no matter what goes on in my life today, there's nothing, fucking nothing, that getting loaded won't make worse, right? So the goal is to stay clean today. I'm nervous and I'm already out of time. Still nervous, it didn't go away. How do I want to end this? I liked what Kathleen was talking about, looking at your reflection in the mirror, right? And loving the person who's there. When I was getting loaded, I remember spitting in the mirror at the person who was there. Today, not only do I love and appreciate that man, I hold him in high regard, right? And so I'm constantly with the refrain of be good to yourself today, right? As far as I know, today's the only day that we have, right? Live it to the best. Are you guys counting down, waving? Okay, I passed my time. I'm getting signals, I think, here. Live every day like it's your last, because you never know, right? And then one last thing I want to share. I say this a lot. And when I'm working with guys, I have sponsees, and they might be having problems with this, that, the other, the spouse, the job, whatever the issue might be. And I often ask them to just stop for a minute and say, what's for dinner? And when they get that like bewildered look in their face, it's like, you know, what's really important today? What's for dinner, right? I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for this opportunity. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much. Let's give a hand again to our speakers. Okay, at this time I'm going to ask Angelica to come to the stage and read We Do Recover.
Hi, I'm Angelica, and I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best as we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to all of us. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay, before we finish, I have some announcements. Please note that members must display their badges to enter the convention center beyond the registration area. Lost badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badge with you at all times. The merchandise room is open today at 1 p.m. for pre-registrants only and will be open to all registrants starting Friday at 10 a.m. NOS on-site store is open till 6 p.m. today. All are welcome. Access to the main meeting hall. Please listen closely. We will have three separate lines for main meeting access based on your date of registration. Purple badges are boarding pass A. Blue badges are boarding pass B. And yellow badges are boarding pass C. Please look for the signage that matches your badge to line up with the main meeting for the main meetings. We also have assigned seating for those who have mobility issues and let us know that they cannot get off of their scooter as well as designated scooter parking areas in halls A, B, and C. The elevators will be limited to mobility devices and strollers simply because of the demand we have. We recognize that it is a common practice for members to take photos and videos at NA events and post them on social networks. We don't believe this to be in conflict with our traditions as long as they are for the enjoyment of members and are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from the NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet titled Social Media and Our Guiding Principles. Thank you. And now we are going to close our meeting. I'm going to ask you for a little moment of silence, followed by the third step prayer. Many addicts have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live clean. Thank you very much.